Funny way of saying howdy, partner.
I was saying goodbye.
Now, why is a nice Texas boy like Aaron Black in bed with the Black Dragon? Older you works for Kotal Kahn. He's one of the good guys, kinda.
When I pick sides, I pick a winner. Every time.
What's up? Welcome to NExpress, the Nintendo show of GoombaStomp.com. I am one of your hosts, Tim Mason. With me is Ricky D.
What's up, Tim Mason? What's up, Nintendo Nation? Tim, I'm in a really good mood today. I got so much to say, but first, we should really introduce the philosopher, Mr. Patrick Murphy.
The philosopher. It's true. Where'd that come from, though?
I don't know. I kind of nicknamed you the philosopher on the last podcast. It kind of just stuck. I like it.
Is it because you're always stoned?
Oh, snap, no. Tim, on a recent podcast, you said that Nintendo is going to drop a 2D Super Mario game. It was part of your E3 predictions. And my question for you today, Tim, is why? Why, Tim Mason, would Nintendo release a 2D Super Mario Maker game when the entire world, the community, anyone who owns a Switch can actually make a Super Mario Maker level in 2D and 3D? It's amazing. We're going to talk about it. I'm hyped. I'm stoked.
I think I said that was my prediction until they actually gave us Mario Maker 2. And then I'm pretty sure I followed up with, because why would you need one when this is going to be a bunch of free levels all the time?
Tim, so. I'm on basketball mode right now. I'm like, you don't know me. When I watch basketball, when I play basketball, I'm like super hyper. Right now there's a game going on. My nephew and I are watching a game. I had to press pause on my game to come talk to you guys. I'm not happy about that. That's all good. Game of Thrones was literally on fire this weekend. The Toronto Raptors were on fire this weekend. I saw John Wick. Keanu Reeves is on fire this weekend. It was a good weekend, Tim. Plus, it was my birthday, your birthday, Ryan's birthday. It was everybody's birthday over at NExpress and Game Boys.
Yeah, it absolutely was. So it's been a nuts weekend, and we have so much to talk about. Honestly, there's Mortal Kombat 11 to talk about. Rick, that is your news and coverage. We've got a brand new Nintendo Direct drop earlier today, revealing what Super Mario Maker 2 is bringing to the table. It's everything. And we also have, of course, Detective Pikachu, the long-awaited live-action Pokemon film that here at NExpress, we have been really chomping at the bit just to get to that. And it's finally here, so we're going to do two segments on that. A spoiler-free central review in the middle of the show, and then a spoiler-filled review. It's so hard to review that movie without spoilers. So the end of the show will be that. We'll give you plenty of warning. So tune in now as we go into kind of what we've been up to, and Rick can talk about a promotion and Mortal Kombat. Rick, take it away.
Okay, well, first of all, Tim, I made a huge mistake in playing Assassin's Creed Odyssey. Now, I know what you're thinking. Why is he talking about Assassin's Creed Odyssey? It's not available on the Switch, and this is a Nintendo podcast. I'm leading to something, though. So first of all, Assassin's Creed Odyssey is incredible. I think it's actually the best game of last year. If I had played it last year, I would have voted it number one. What this game is to Assassin's Creed, Breath of the Wild is to The Legend of Zelda. The two games share so much in common. Guys, if you like Breath of the Wild, you need to play Assassin's Creed Odyssey. It is incredible. I hope to God at E3, Nintendo announces this cloud service that they have going on in Japan where people can play Assassin's Creed and Resident Evil 2 on the Switch. I hope they bring it stateside, because y'all need to play this game. Patrick, you're going to love this game. I know, Patrick. I've known you for like 5 years now. This is a game for you. You love Breath of the Wild. I'm sure you like Greek mythology and history.
Oh, I'm in love with Greek mythology.
Oh, my God, guys. This game is incredible. The combat, the mechanics, the controls, so fluid. The story, the cinematography, the lighting, everything about it is so good. So I've been knee-deep in Assassin's Creed. And also what I love about it, just like The Legend of Zelda game, there's lots of side quests, but I never find it overwhelming. Usually it takes like about 5 minutes to complete a side quest, but this game is incredible. Anyhow, I hope Nintendo announces this cloud service at E3 so people stateside who do not own a PS4 and Xbox can actually play Assassin's Creed. I have been also playing a lot of Mortal Kombat. Now, here's the thing about Mortal Kombat 11. This game got released on a Switch. Now, the good news is we have a Mortal Kombat game released on a Nintendo Switch. The bad news is it's not exactly the best port. That said, my niece's boyfriend actually decided to buy it on the Switch, even though he has like a PC and a PlayStation and all that, and he loves it on the Switch.
They did patch it. They patched it recently, which fixed some of the problems, I think, as far as the frame rate goes. I think it maintains a much more solid 60 frames per second after that little boost that happened with the Switch. Like they you can overclock now at certain moments, and I think that really helped. I watched a Digital Foundry episode, I think, and they kind of showed how Mortal Kombat 11 kind of operates better now.
If that is the case, I highly recommend Mortal Kombat 11. I think this game is fantastic. It is one of the best games of the year. It is one of the best fighting games I've ever played. And the thing about Mortal Kombat 11, if you've played 10 and 9, it's part of a trilogy. Like, they essentially rebooted the franchise back in, I think it was, 2011, if I'm not mistaken? And so when they rebooted the franchise, they also rebooted the story. And what is great about these three games specifically, especially Mortal Kombat 11, it's the story mode. I mean, if there's any reason to play Mortal Kombat 11, like even if you can just borrow the game from a friend for like a day, just play the story mode. It is amazing. The story mode puts Avengers Endgame to shame. It is on an epic scale with every single character. Well, not every single character, but like there is 25 characters, classic characters like Raiden and Scorpion and Sub-Zero and Liu Kang, you name it, Sonya Blade. But you also get them from the past, because the characters from the past come into the present via some kind of like weird time travel. It's really complicated and convoluted. It doesn't matter. The story makes no sense, but the story is incredible. And honest to God, it shares so much in common with Avengers Endgame that if you like Avengers, you should really play the story. There's this epic battle in which all of these warriors, these like past and present, like you'll have two Johnny Blades, you'll have two Raidens, you'll have two Liu Kangs, you'll have two Scorpions, they run into battle. Like, it's amazing. Like, it's not just the fact that there are these epic battles, and like within the story, which lasts about 5 to 6 hours, each chapter you fight four times. You basically take control of the player and you fight, right? Like you would in a Mortal Kombat game. The rest of it, to be fair, you're mostly watching the cinematics. It's still great though. But the thing about Mortal Kombat 11 is not only is it well scripted, and these guys, this studio, they always do a great job with their story modes and fighting games, because they also did the Injustice games, right? So it's not just well scripted, like the writing's fantastic, but even the voice acting is amazing. Like for a fighting game, like I love the motion capture, I love the facial expressions, I love everything about the way the characters are fleshed out, like the stories, the character arcs, but also the voice acting is fantastic, except for, and I can't remember her name right now, it's the former ECW, now WWE Women's Champion, Ronda, help me Ronda out here.
Rousey?
Yeah.
Isn't that her name?
So
Ronda Rousey?
Yeah, she does the voice work for Sonya Blade. And she's not very good.
Well, she's not an actress. I mean,
well, no, she's not.
She's an MMA fighter, right? Like,
but she's like the only character who's not voiced really well. But the rest of them are on spot. Like, and there's like fantastic moments, like really funny moments when younger Johnny Cage meets the older and wiser Johnny Cage, and dude, the chemistry
wiser
between them.
Johnny Cage.
No, but it's so funny, the chemistry between the characters. And it's really weird because like younger Johnny Cage comes into the present and he meets his daughter and has the hots for his daughter. Right? Because he says Young has his daughter in the game at that time.
It's old really, boy.
Yeah. And I won't spoil it for anyone, but if you're a fan of Liu Kang, holy cow, man. They do something amazing with his character towards the end of this game. And Raiden, too. So, yeah, basically, like I said, the story is all over the map. It's really hard to explain. There's three new characters that you can play with, four new characters in total. And yeah, the mythology and lore of Mortal Kombat blows me away. I wrote an article, which I'll point our listeners to. It's on the website. Just type in Mortal Kombat 11 story mode or something. Search for it on Google, GoombaStomp.com. So I wrote this like 2,000 word article, and I was like, should I try to explain? Yeah, I don't know. I was like, should I try to explain the mythology and lore of Mortal Kombat? No, because it's going to be like 100,000 words. Like, it's insane. Like, there's so many characters, and that's what I like about the series, though. Like, it's amazing. Like, I still think, and we're going to talk about this later on, I still think Mortal Kombat, the movie, is the best video game movie adaptation to date. I really do. Yeah, yeah, I really do. So, yeah, Mortal Kombat 11. Highly recommend it. And I mean, if you like Mortal Kombat, just has a fighting game, it's everything you would want and more, but also it has that incredible story mode.
So check it out now, playable on the Switch, where it may or may not be more fun in this case, but it sounds like it's improved. So check that out. Patrick, have you been up to anything new?
As far as games, I've just been replaying some old ones. I mean, I went back after finishing SteamWorld Quest. I wanted to go back and check out SteamWorld Heist again to see if, because I wasn't, you know, so high on SteamWorld Quest, even though it was fine. You know, I didn't really think it was, I thought it missed some opportunities. So I've been playing SteamWorld Heist, which I still absolutely love. And other than that, I went back and, you know, started Mario plus Rabbids to sort of work my way through that one again, too. So kind of two turn-based strategy games at the moment. But I'm just waiting so far, just biding my time until some other games come out.
Speaking of Mario plus Rabbids, is it me or is Ubisoft severely underrated as a studio, as a game developer? I mean, every year they make a game, at least one or two games that are like top 20 material, if not top 10.
Yeah, I think they...
Every year. They just got too bogged down with their annualized Assassin's Creed and they didn't ever really changed that formula until very recently. So I think everyone was just getting really tired of them and fed up with them. It was like as bad as Call of Duty at that point. So I do think they are a quality studio, even when they branch out and do something sort of different, like their fighting game For Honor. I thought it was absolutely brilliant if there were a couple of missteps along the way, but it was so fun to play that it's hard to get too angry about it. So they are capable, that's for sure.
And Starlink, like, they take some chances every now and then. I do think they're underrated in a sense, and that is because their reputation suffered. There was a time, like Tim said, when they were basically just busting out annualized releases of stuff, and they weren't like EA quite so bad as EA is, but they had gotten a little stale. And I think they found their creative stride again. They're definitely, it's not like everything they do is gold, but like you said, Rick, like they're at least putting out one or two titles a year that are pretty top notch.
Yeah, like the Division 2 is hot, Assassin's Creed, Origins, and Odyssey, Mario plus Rabbids. So they make some good games. And the thing is, I think a lot of studios can learn from Mortal Kombat and Assassin's Creed, where you take a break, you reboot the franchise, you try different things, and you end up making like the best games within the series.
God of War.
Yeah, God of War, Legend of Zelda. I mean, Breath of the Wild was completely different than the previous Zelda games. So, yeah, fantastic week of gaming for me.
And I have been doing nothing but playing Box Boy plus Box Girl. Can't recommend that game highly enough. Get it if you play alone. Get it if you play with someone. Or if you do both, it's perfect. So that's all I have to say about that. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to do a really quick segment on Super Mario Maker. So don't go anywhere.
Untwist your panties, older me. I'm a star. This is a military operation, not a movie set. I'm only the best fighter here, but your daughter's got me sitting at the kids' table. Our daughter is CO. A little humility might earn her respect. Dad always said, hungry people eat lunch. Humble people serve it. Dad was an asshole. Hollywood made us an even bigger one.
One of the absolute biggest selling points of the Wii U was Super Mario Maker, an absolutely sensational game where you could create your own Mario stages. That game felt like you could do absolutely anything that you have seen in a Mario game. How wrong we were, because Super Mario Maker 2 is here, and you can do anything. I swear, I did not anticipate this direct being too much. But, boy, I didn't realize how much we were missing. in the Super Mario Maker. Now we have it almost all, it feels like, at least, in terms of 2D Mario Makers. You guys, how did you react to this trailer? Did you throw money at the screen yet?
I was surprised, satisfied, and at times blown away. New courses, new tools, new single-player story mode. What the hell? 3D Mario, 100 Nintendo-created courses that come packaged with the game, new themes, details about the online course sharing, options to create courses and play online multiplayer mode. Nintendo. Nintendo, man, you're spoiling us. This is big news. This right here, Tim Mason, is why I'm excited for E3. Why I'm excited for June. We already know almost everything about Super Mario Maker 2. They're going to give us more details come E3. I'm still waiting to know if we can actually use Amiibo support, because I want to create my levels and be able to use my Amiibo characters like we were able to do in Super Mario Maker 1 when it had little Kirby running around, the little Donkey Kong. Man.
Rick.
I'm impressed.
You and I are seriously sharing a brain right now, because I finished watching it and was like, holy God, this looks fantastic. Can I still be Charizard, though? So I'm totally with you there, but I don't know why they would take away functionality when seriously it seems like they are jam-packing this thing full of every single Mario concept that has ever been there. It is nuts. There's a bunch of features that we've never even seen in a Mario game, but then everything else that we have seen, whether it be the switch blocks or the like snake blocks or the angry sun, so many things all coming to this game. Slopes, you can add slopes now. And Rick, you really highlighted the best part of this. As a co-op multiplayer enthusiast, all of the Game Boys were watching this at relatively the same time, and all of us kind of lost our minds. I cannot wait for both of these modes, the multiplayer and for the co-op. Both look so good. And man, only one Switch needs to be connected to the internet. That is amazing. So good.
Yeah, if you're playing local co-op, the fact that it has online co-op is really cool, too. Now, I didn't buy the last Mario Maker, and I probably won't buy this one either. And that all comes down to the fact that, you know, I'm not really a creator type when it comes to video games. I don't really buy games where I need to create something out of them. But just from looking at this, I mean, this is basically offering it everything you could want. Just a ton of stuff that, like you said, has never been in a Mario game. So the options are so many. I mean, people are going to be churning out some insane levels with this stuff. Just what they showed off, kind of the hints at how you could use some of these tools, are going to allow, especially for those who create like sort of puzzle platforming. I think that's have the biggest impact. Like, obviously, people will always be able to create Super Meat Boy, you know, incredibly hard type levels, right? But I think the puzzle platformers got so many more tools out of this thing.
See, that's where I'm really excited, because if you remember, right, we had a contest on this show. We made a big bet. The costs were very high. I'm still reeling from losing this bet. And it's 100% because we had a big contest on the show. Go back and listen to that whole ordeal, that whole I demand a recount still. I lost a bet because everyone else made a straight Mario stage and I made a puzzle level.
No, I didn't.
Just tag as, hey, this is a puzzle. And it was so mentally, like, I pushed what Mario could do. And if you just messed around long enough, you could figure it out. And once you figured it out, it was so easy. But
Jim, I had used puzzle Mario's stage. Mike said that he was able to solve mine, but he was not able to solve yours.
It was just one. I know exactly what puzzle it was. It was so tricky that Mike couldn't solve it. And I can tell you right now, Mike put, 3 minutes into my one puzzle and couldn't solve it and gave up and got frustrated.
The thing is, when we had this contest, our games editor over at GoombaStomp.com was the judge of the levels. And he said he liked my level because my level was thematically linked to Donkey Kong, to the point where I used my Amiibo figure so you can play with Donkey Kong Jr. In the level. And it was designed to look like a level from Donkey Kong Jr. or Donkey Kong, right? And my level was hard. I don't think he finished it, but I think he liked what I did with the theme and having Donkey Kong as a playable character. So that's the advantage I had in that contest. And that's why I kind of like the idea of having different themes in Super Mario Maker 2, be it underwater or nighttime mode. And also, like, you could go from the 8-bit classic mode to Super Mario World to even 3D Mario. Like, they're, like it's like, I understand what Patrick's saying about how you don't necessarily want to sit down and create a level and spend hours creating a level that maybe somebody will or will not play. We don't know.
But, it's just not my own personal
right,
deal.
But I the just, thing you know, is, I'm not with the game, though, you can play Super Mario Maker levels you've never played before times infinity. So, like, why would you need to go play? I mean, I would still go play Super Mario Bros. 3 or any of the original Super Mario games on the online system, right? But I could also just play any level that someone makes and experience something new. What worries me, and this is the problem we had with Super Mario Maker, the original game on the Wii U, is I just want them to be able to filter these levels. And I think this time they have a better game plan. Yeah. Like, I want to know that I'm playing a level that's a puzzle level, not something that's super hard like Super Meat Boy. I want to know that I'm playing a level that's actually really well made, and that's why it's sitting at the top of the charts. But I do like the fact that you have to tag your levels. Like, is your level a puzzle level? Is your level an underwater level? Is your level a 3D level or a 2D level? You know what I mean? So I like the fact that they are going to force us, the creators, to categorize our levels that we create, so when people search for it, they know what it is that they're going to be looking for. But I also hope that if, like, Tim makes a level, it'll be easy for me to go play his level, because I don't know if you guys remember, it was such a pain to the like code. Play someone's level, because it'll be like a 15 digit long code. You'd have to punch in all these like digits to be able to like play somebody else's level. So that was kind of annoying.
Well, we have a share button with our Switch, so I'm sincerely hoping that there's some really, really easy ways to get these codes out there that people can easily respond to. But it looks like, with all of the profiles that are going on, it looks like it's going to be a lot easier. Hopefully you can just have very direct access to your friends list and all of their stages, because this is going to be absolutely the future of our show for a good month, I would wager.
I think it's a good choice to release the game in June. Like, right after E3, but before all of the big guns come rolling out, before the Animal literal, Crossings and the Pokemon.
The literal big guns.
Yeah, Splatoon for 3, sure.
Getting announced this June.
Hey, man, you never know. I still think we're going to get, like, a big announcement at E3. Like, we know, like, Nintendo officially announced the lineup for E3, meaning the games that people will be able to play on the show floor and the games that they will for sure be showcasing during the Nintendo E3 digital event, direct, whatever you call it. And it's everything we've kind of seen before. I mean, we haven't actually seen footage of Luigi's Mansion 3. We've seen only a cinematic cutscene, but we know it's coming.
We saw a little bit.
Animal Crossing. We haven't seen anything about Animal Crossing, but we've known it was coming for a while now. They haven't yet announced anything that we did not already know about, but everything we know about. But there's got to be, like, there won't be anything to play on the show floor that we don't know about already.
I think there could be small ones, maybe, or maybe not to play, you're right, maybe not to play. But I think they might announce maybe some more mid-level games, maybe some more Box Boy type games.
They announced Mario Odyssey, and it was playable immediately.
Yeah, that's
so
possible.
Like, it could happen. They're really good at hiding stuff in development. So there's a possibility. I just don't know what it would be. Donkey Kong? I Pikmin? I'm kind of at a loss this year, I'll be honest.
And you know, the thing about Super Mario Maker 2 is, like, this is, like, they haven't actually announced all of the features, right? Like, when I'm looking at the features for Super Mario 3D World, there isn't really much here on the press release. And I know, like, there's Cat Mario, there's the Clear Pipe, there's Koopa Troopa Car, the car, man, the car is in the game.
That's pretty good.
There's the Piranha Creeper, but there's got to be more. Like, you know, there's got to be more. And if there isn't more on the day the game launches, they're going to release a ton of free DLC you know, eventually. Like, they're just going to keep on adding to the game, because the problem with Super Mario Maker is it came out late into the Wii U's life cycle. And let's face it, not too many people had the Wii U, and I don't remember them releasing much content. Like, maybe for, like, about a year, but it wasn't much. Like, we got some stupid, like, Mercedes-Benz tie-in promo, remember?
Yeah, and they made subtle improvements, but they never really had any, you're right, no major DLC or anything.
They had, like, an expansion that was, like, 14 new tools or something like that. That was, like, it wasn't huge, but it wasn't nothing. And I'm sure a lot of people got a lot of use out of that. But it wasn't, I don't know. It's a tricky game to update and bring new content to without inventing new content. But it looks like they're kind of up for that with, like, the night features and some of these other tools. It looks like they're just having fun throwing new stuff into the game that'll be just exclusive to Mario Maker. And I think that's amazing. I think that's a great idea.
3D World is probably, like, in addition to the multiplayer, the 3D World stuff, which is kind of separate from the other Mario Maker styles, as they said, you know, because you're only going to be able to do certain features like the glass pipes and all that stuff in the 3D World style. But that, to me, might be a bigger draw than many of the other features, just because it actually looks different than any side-scrolling Mario that we've had before. It doesn't look like New Super Mario Brothers. So it plays differently than any side-scrolling Mario that's ever been in existence, I think. I mean, it looks like it has different features, different enemies and stuff like that, and obstacles. So I think that's going to be a big thing, because that's going to almost feel like a brand new Super Mario, 2D Super Mario. And it's in a different style. It's got different power-ups than any 2D Mario's had before. That one's going to be really interesting to see what people do, because they can essentially make an all-new game that looks nothing like any game Nintendo has made.
Right, and I think, Tim, you're actually kind of right, because you kind of did call it. We are technically getting a new Super Mario 2D side-scroller, because the game does have a story mode that features 100 original Nintendo-crafted courses to play, which is essentially a brand-new Super Mario 2D side-scrolling game.
You cannot undersell how good Nintendo is at making Mario stages. Like, whether it be a main series Mario game or the last Mario Maker, those games, those levels were so fun to play.
Anyhow, I'm psyched. I'm stoked. I'm going to pick it up day one.
Same. I love the original, whether it was just playing stages or making stages. I was in love with it. I want to say it was one of those games that I predicted for 2018 back in 2017, and I was just off. But early on, I said one of the things that they could do was it had co-op, and I'm so glad they did, and they gave us even more than I anticipated, so I cannot wait. So look out for Super Luigi Maker, am I right? He's there, guys. coming this June. Right now, though, we're going to take a break. When we come back, a discussion of Detective Pikachu. Don't go anywhere.
Welcome to Rhyme City, a celebration of the harmony between humans and Pokemon.
Tim, your dad was a legend in this precinct. If you were anything like your dad...
I'm not.
I remember. You wanted to be a Pokemon trainer when you were young.
Yeah, that didn't really work out. Someone there? Whoever you are, I know how to use this.
Oh, jeez.
Here we go.
I know. You can't understand me, but put down the stapler or I will electrocute you.
Did you just talk?
Whoa. Did you just understand me?
Oh my God, you can understand me.
Stop.
I've been so lonely.
They try to talk to me all the time. All they hear is Pika Pika.
You can hear him, right?
Pika Pika.
Yeah, Pika Pika Pika. He's adorable.
You're adorable. They can't understand me, kid.
Can no one else hear him?
I don't need a Pokemon, period.
Then what about a world-class detective? Because if you want to find your pops, I'm your best bet.
Welcome back to N-Express. We're at our main event, discussion of Pokemon Detective Pikachu in theaters now. This is the non-spoiler section, So if you have not seen the movie, feel free to stick around. We will give you a warning, take a break, and then go into spoilers after that. So for right now, you are safe. Enjoy the discussion. And I'm really curious what's about to happen, because all of us were really excited for this movie. We had decently high hopes, although I don't think any of us looked at this too unrealistically. But all of us were kind of subtly thinking that this maybe could be the best video game adaptation that has ever been. And Rick, you're already saying it's not. But Patrick, where are you on this?
It's good. It's tough for me to say. I have a soft spot for Street Fighter 2 just because it's so hilariously cheesy. But it's definitely one of the best ones. I can give you that. It's a solid movie. It's not a great movie. Video game movies still don't have their great movie yet. But it is a good movie, albeit flawed. It is entertaining. So it's a solid video game movie. It's better than most. If it's not the best, like, which is really, I mean, that's not saying much among video game movies. It is right up there. Like, it's got to be in the top one or two, if you know, depending on who you are. It's right up there. It is a very, very solidly professionally made movie. It, like I say, it has flaws. There is a, you know, script by committee. You could definitely see it in this movie, but there's some great production design. And fantastic, I'm sure Rick's going to point it out, cinematography and the performances for the most part are pretty fun. So it's solidly entertaining, Tim. I am not sure that I'd call it the best video game movie of all time, but it'd be right up there as, you know, one or two, depending on my mood.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say it depends on what you consider a video game movie. But in terms of pure adaptations, I think this is a pretty easy win. I think there was nothing remotely in the way of Detective Pikachu taking this. So I think it probably is. That, again, is not saying much. But Patrick, I am in complete agreement with your analysis. We have a perfectly good, really fun summer blockbuster, and I really enjoyed myself. I'm kind of frustrated because I don't know if you guys will agree with this, and not to like get too much of the like general review out of the way, but I felt like this movie was teetering perpetually on greatness, and then they just made some really interesting choices. And I'm like, well, now you're stuck in the permanently just okay to good category. Like, you could have striven for so much more. You could have gotten it, and they chose not to. It basically feels like they chose not to.
It's the problem with Hollywood. It's been a problem for about 15 years where even the best Hollywood studio movies can't seem to end a movie well. It always falls apart in the third act. But I started writing this big, huge article about the movie, and it completely fell apart because I realized that 75% of my article was really about Who Framed Roger Rabbit. So what I had to do is I had to cut out the whole like six paragraphs about Who Framed Roger Rabbit, save it for a different article. And instead, I just focused on the production values, which Patrick alluded to, the cinematography, the set design, the lighting, the costumes, the CGI, the special effects. Everything about this movie is fantastic. There's a lot of love put into this film. But I could not help but think of Who Framed Roger Rabbit as soon as the movie started. I mean, clearly the director here, Rob Letterman, took notes from Robert Zemeckis' classic film. If you haven't seen Who Framed Roger Rabbit, you need to see that movie. It's a
far superior movie to this. This is more fluff. Roger Rabbit is a classic, like you said.
But like Roger Rabbit, it's a film noir. It's set in a universe in which animated characters live in a city, a town, side by side with humans. The difference is Roger Rabbit, it's 2D animation, and here it's CGI created characters. So you replace, for example, Bob Hoskins, who starred in Who Framed Roger Rabbit, with Justice Smith. And you replace Roger Rabbit with a 3D recreation via CGI, Detective Pikachu, voiced by Ryan Reynolds, right? Mm-hmm. So like the two films share a lot in common, but the thing is, I agree with you, Tim, and I listened to the Game Boys podcast. You guys did a full 1 hour review of this movie. I wish it just stuck to a detective film noir story.
Yes,
towards the end, thank you. they lose control, they get too ambitious. It's this whole like sci-fi weird overplotted storyline. And also when they leave Rhyme City, it's not the same. Like it's not to say that the countryside doesn't look good. It's shot beautifully. This film, by the way, was shot on 35mm. And it's not to say like there's always a debate between does digital look better than film? Does film look better than digital? It really depends on the filmmaker, the movie, and the cinematographer. I've seen movies shot on digital that look just as good, if not better, than movies shot on film, and vice versa. But the thing here is, this movie relies so much on visual effects, CGI, that I think it was wise to shoot it on film, because I think it would have been too digital, too CGI, too... It would like, I mean, the thing I like about this is that the contrast between the CGI creations versus the actual film, right? Because they shot it on 35mm, and you have that beautifully lit site. You have Rhyme City, which they created, and it's got all these like beautiful shadows and like three-quarter lighting and just all the stuff that you've seen in like classic film noir. And I like the contrast, and I think it makes the characters just stand out. They look more lively. And I'm not entirely sure if it's... I think it's a mix of everything. Like, it's a mix of the CGI, the work that was put into creating those characters. They did it mostly a good job with most of the characters. But also just the fact that it's like, yeah, they actually shot this on location in London. It wasn't shot in some studio in a warehouse somewhere. And you can tell.
They went for natural lighting. That was the biggest thing. Like, they made everything look very, very real. There wasn't a moment in this movie where I didn't believe this world existed. And I can't say that for a lot of other CG fests. Like, for most CG fests, I don't buy it. I don't buy the Avengers settings half the time. Like, I don't buy Thor's world. It doesn't seem real in the slightest. But this seemed like a real place. Like, Blade Runner City, LA, seemed like a real place.
Right, and it's funny, because when we first saw the trailer way back, we all pointed to Blade Runner. And sure enough, you know, the movie gets released, some people interviewed a cinematographer, and what do you know? He says that Blade Runner was his main source of inspiration when filming Detective Pikachu. He wanted to make Rhyme City look like the city in Blade Runner. And so everything about the look of the film was inspired by Blade Runner. And in terms of like the overall structure, it was inspired by Who Framed Roger Rabbit. But I just like the fact that it's a neo-noir, it's a sci-fi film, it's a family friend kid whatever, like, adventure film. It's also a murder mystery, you know, but it's also still a Pokemon film. And I kept on thinking of, like, classic films that I loved when I was younger, like Who Framed Roger Rabbit, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Ghostbusters. I mean, even Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Remember April O'Neil? Her character is so similar to the character in this film.
You know what I thought they were going for in this? I honestly thought they were going for Kim Cattrall's Gracie, I don't remember her name, from Big Trouble in Little China, the fast-talking reporter who always is looking for a scoop. But you're right, there's a parallel with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles as well. My first thought was that she was trying to be more like the Big Trouble in Little China, you know, Kim Cattrall's news reporter. And it didn't work at all. Like, she didn't have nearly the... She was the one weak link, I kind of thought. Like, she didn't get her character very well. I don't think
she had anything to work with.
No, so she didn't. I can't blame the actress completely. I shouldn't say it's her fault. I think it's a combination. I think she didn't quite find the right comic timing or talk fast enough. That could have been direction as well. But I also think you're right. She didn't have the greatest material to work with either.
No, and honestly, I think that, like, without too much exception, almost every single character that isn't Tim Goodman and Detective Pikachu is pretty throwaway.
Like, I liked Ken Watanabe's lieutenant. I thought he had a lot of... He lent some weight.
But that's 100% the actor. And like, we talked about this a lot on Game Boys.
Oh, that you're right. It wasn't the script. You're right.
No.
And same with Bill Nye. It was like...
Yeah. Don't you feel like they kind of wasted his potential? Because he's actually really good in the movie, but he's in the movie for maybe like a total of 10 minutes.
Yes.
As Ken Watanabe. Like, guys, like, he's like he's the awesome. Biggest, best actor you have in this movie. Like, no offense to Bill.
You brought this up, and this is where they went wrong. They should have just been a detective movie, and in that situation, Ken Watanabe's lieutenant would have had a bigger role.
Exactly.
He would have been interacting
right.
with the detectives a lot more. What they unfortunately went for, and it was disappointing from the very first time it happens, is the action The action is very, very disappointing, I think. I think it's very boring. And from the very first time, and, you know, we'll get into it, you know, in the spoiler review, but pretty early on when there's a little bit of an action scene, that was the, I was really buying the movie up to that point. I was like, wow, this is actually really, really good as they're getting to the city and all this other kind of stuff. The first action scene was my first little valley. I went down a little bit. I was like, oh, I don't know, man. This is, they didn't shoot this action scene very well. They didn't, pace it very well. They didn't really seem to know what to do. They just kind of wanted to throw an action scene in here. And as more action starts to happen, and Rick, you brought this up, for one thing, like everything you said, it's like you were speaking it out of my mind. Once they leave the city, the action ramps up and the interest level goes down. I thought the first half of that movie was much more interesting than the second half of the movie. And of course, we'll get into the end later. It's because there's too much action.
Patrick, it's quite literally night and day. It literally transitions from a nighttime noir to a daytime CGI, I don't know, slog. It's not.
And we have to talk about the problems with the countryside scenes in the third act in the next segment, in which we spoil the movie. But, like, I did not know this, but when I was writing my article, I did some research and was reading some interviews with the director and the cinematographer. There was very little green screen used in this movie. Like I said, they actually shot on, like not on set, but on locations, like somewhere in, like, London. And I think the thing is, with those scenes in the countryside, when you get the Grey Ninja action scenes, for example, I think that is when, like, it was so, like, I think it was too much for them to grasp. Like, how are we going to develop these, like, action sequences in which you have, like, what, 5-6 Grey Ninjas running alongside the wall and on the ceiling and trying to attack Justice Smith and what's her face as they're running away with Detective Pikachu. Like, that was a lot to handle, and I kind of feel like the movie did not need it. It didn't need the action sequences. It could have just been a straight up detective story, and it would have been good.
But here's what I'll say: if they would have kept all those sequences in the city and kept inspiration from Blade Runner, those scenes would have played out way differently, been way more suspenseful, and then been really, really cool. If it was like Greninjas are chasing Justice Smith and Detective Pikachu, and, you know, like the end of Blade Runner, right? Like classic stuff, suspenseful, really cool, but not overly CGI, not overly action. It's got a ton of emotional resonance. I think that they could have done something like that, and that could have been really cool. And still would have been more action-oriented. Or even just thrown in a couple more Pokemon battles. You guys, this is Pokemon. Like, they can fight occasionally. But instead, Detective Pikachu doesn't fight.
And what all that action does, by the way, is we talked about, like I mentioned, it's overplotted. The end gets absolutely ridiculous. And again, we'll go into that. But the action is what leads to throwing in those action scenes. Leads to them having to rush this stuff to try to make everything make sense and wrap it all up way too quick, so that, like, there are payoffs that there was never a setup for, and thus all the payoffs, or none of them, feel satisfying because they never properly have time to set them up. Whereas in a good mystery, if they had made this a detective and kept it a little more focused and just made it one big solid mystery instead of having a bunch of things that were all going on at once that they have to resolve in the end, it would have had a much more satisfying conclusion. But the action, it all stems from the action, I think, the faults.
I don't know if you'll agree, but I think the best scene in the movie is the scene that features Mr. Mime. And yes! I think he stole
the
show.
Most
and it's
that
not
was
just
that seemed like a detective movie.
Yes, but it also seemed like a scene straight out of Who Framed Roger Rabbit. And like I liked the interaction between those three characters, and it was just like, again, it was beautifully shot. I think Tim, you're onto something. By the way, the cinematographer who shot this film, he's worked on big movies like Logan, like X-Men First Class, like Gladiator. Like, this guy knows what he's doing. But I do think that when you do get to the countryside and it's all brightly lit and there's sunlight coming out and you're outside, outdoors, I do think you see a lot of the flaws with the CGI creations. Whereas opposed to when it's in Rhyme City and you have this beautiful lit alley, but it's dark and you got a lot of shadows and neon lights and like overcrowded streets and smoke and fog and mist, like it you can kind of cover some of the flaws with the CGI. But I do like I wrote an article about the production values, right? And we've already talked about how this movie's worth seeing just for the cinematography, the editing, the set design, et cetera, et cetera. Like, all of that is fantastic. It looks beautiful. I said in my article, I don't think it's the best video game movie, but I do think it is the best looking video game movie. But I do think there's a lot of things to like. I love the casting. Like, I think Justice Smith was fantastic for what he has to do. I'm kind of confused about his best friend at the beginning because that dude looks like he was 40 years old. So I'm like, how old is
he's Tim? He's a comedian. He's that.
I thought he was pretty funny, actually. I like that interaction between them. But you're right. They did not seem the same age.
No, but I was like, how old is Tim? Like, is he in high school? Is he in college? He works at an insurance company.
Yeah. And he's only 21, you find out, but it's like, I was wondering, it's funny how we were wondering the exact same things. I think we're all three in sync here, because the whole movie, that's exactly what I was thinking. How old are these people? Because Lucy also, I was like, wait a second, like...
She's 7, yeah. For sure. She's like, what is it? She's 12, she was just going on her Pokemon journey, and she like accidentally walked into a newsroom, and they were like, go get me some coffee, and she landed a gig, so there you go.
Yeah. So, but I do like the casting.
It's entertaining, though.
I am not a fan of the script, like the actual story, like the plot, but I am a fan of the writing. Like, I do like the way they wrote the characters and the dialogue. And there is chemistry between Ryan Reynolds and Justice Smith. Justice Smith, like, it's weird because, like, and we're going to have to talk about this soon, but, like, I was expecting Ash Ketchum. And I'm like, okay, so, like, how does this tie into, like, the Pokemon universe? But then someone told me, and you guys discussed this on your podcast, that the movie is very similar to the actual story from the game, Detective Pikachu.
Yeah. Yeah, basically, point for point, none of us have played it, but I've done some reading. See Detective Pikachu, pretty much the narrative right there, with some twists on the story that we can talk about in the final segment.
Yeah, but and I just gotta give props to the composer. So the guy who composed this movie, Henry Jackman, I think his score is amazing. I absolutely adore the music. I was listening to it earlier today on YouTube, and apart from Mr. Mime, who I think stole the show, I really like the fact that they decided to go with Psyduck as her Pokemon starter,
her partner,
yeah. I thought that character is fantastic. I like the fact that he could just explode at any time, and I like the chemistry between him and Pikachu. Like,
yeah, like,
I want to see a buddy cop movie with those two dudes.
Yeah, so there is a lot of good. Seems like they just could have stretched and provided something a little bit better. How they tried hard enough and wanted to distinguish themselves, but alas. Hollywood in their action sequences. I think that's a pretty good stopping point. Do we want to give her a score now and then go into spoilers so that people have a nice cap if they want it, but then can continue to listen if they choose to?
So I really do not like scoring movies more so than I hate scoring video games. So I will just say this. I think this is a great family movie, but I think that even if you have no interest in the Pokemon franchise and you have no knowledge of the Pokemon franchise, you can still enjoy this movie. I think the performances are great. I think it's funny. I think it's well made. And if you like movies like Who Framed Roger Rabbit or Ghostbusters or Gremlins, it's not as good as those movies, but it's well worth your time. Would I see it for like full price admission? I don't know. It's up to you. If you're rich or if you have money, sure, do it. But it's one of the better things to watch out in the cinema right now. I mean, John Wick 3 is pretty awesome until it falls apart in the third act also, but it has this great horse fight sequence.
It's worth seeing. That's basically what I can say. I can't say I was pleasantly surprised, but I found it to be a pleasant movie going experience. I didn't leave with a, you know, bitter taste in my mouth like so many video game movies will give you. So if you're interested in the slightest, and again, like Rick said, I think even if you take somebody who doesn't know Pokemon, they can still get enough out of this. You know, obviously it helps if you recognize certain Pokemon because maybe you'll get a little bit of a fan thrill, but I think it can engage regardless. They do a decent enough job setting up the characters that you can be engaged in.
To answer your question, though, Tim, if I had to score it, like if I had to give it like a star rating, I would give it 3 out of 5 stars based on what it is, based on the fact that it is a kid-friendly family movie. Because even like for a kid-friendly family movie, like there's a lot of dark humor. There's a lot of things that kids just won't catch. You know what I mean? Like a lot of inside jokes. And
I see
like,
what you did there.
Detective Pikachu says a lot of
there's
things.
There's a that cocaine joke.
Yeah, I know, eh?
so good. So I'm totally with you guys. I think in terms of production value, world design, details, aesthetic, cinematography, A+ movie. Honestly, I was so into the world of this movie, I can't even tell you. Some of these creatures looked so remarkable that at times I legitimately kind of forgot that I wasn't watching some form of actual not like a real life creature, but maybe like a practical effect. Like they did such a good job capturing the look of the Pokemon while still making them look realistic. Pikachu in particular looked just incredible.
But it's not just the look though, it's the world building. Like when they go to the underground nightclub and that is the place where Pokemon actually get to battle, because the whole thing about Rhyme City is it's a city in which Pokemon and people can live side by side and not have to worry about fighting. But they still fight in Rhyme City underground illegally. And I like that. I like how they get to this underground, dingy, like sketchy nightclub out in the middle of nowhere. And it looks like a scene from Street Fighter 2, and they're all caged and like, there's a battle going on. And then what's his face? Magikarp. He evolves into...
No, wait, we should wait for spoiler.
Yeah.
Wait for the spoiler.
So anyhow, I do think that the second act is the best part of the movie. And that's when we get to the underground club scene. That's when we get the Mr. Mime scene. And I hope we get more of that in the sequel, because you know we're going to get a sequel.
I actually am not so sure about a sequel, but this is definitely well worth viewing in terms of just design alone. It looks incredible. And I personally can't wait to go see it again, because there are so many tiny details that I was like, I can't absorb all of this in one sitting. I'm going to have to buy this movie and pause it and look at every individual sign, because so many jokes and references, and I can't wait. So Pokemon fan or not, go see it. Pokemon fan, enjoy it, because you're certainly going to get a kick. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, spoiler review of this movie. Things are going to get a little bit Zubat-y, so don't go anywhere.
So there I was. I woke up with a heavy case of amnesia in the middle of nowhere. The only clue to my past is Harry's name and address inside this hat. So I made my way to the apartment, and that's when I found you and your stapler gun.
Stop talking! You're a hallucination!
You're a hallucination.
So you're a talking Pikachu with no memories who's addicted to caffeine.
I can stop whenever I want. These are just choices. Another round, extra shot, black as night. Thank you, sweetie. I don't know. Maybe Harry got in too deep. Mixed up the wrong crowd, that kind of thing. Look, you can talk to humans. I can talk to Pokemon. And if you want to find your pops, we're going to need each other.
No, I don't need a Pokemon.
What about a world-class detective? My clues!
What is all this?
Harry is still alive. Case closed, but still open until I solve it. All right, here it is. Harry faked his own death. Or somebody else faked Harry's death. Or Harry faked somebody else's death. That last one doesn't work
no.
at all.
Welcome back to N Express, where we are literally all just falling apart like this movie, because what is this guy trying to do? So
the villain is so missing parts in this movie.
Part of his brain, apparently.
I do not understand the plot. Like, I don't understand what happens towards the end of the movie. Okay, so like, I have questions, but before I ask the questions, I just want to say, I was going to say it earlier because it's a spoiler, my second favorite scene, my favorite scene is Mr. Mime. My second favorite scene is when they're at the underground club and there's a Pokemon battle and Charizard shows up and Magikarp evolves into, what is the name of that Pokemon? Because he's amazing.
Gyarados.
holy cow, that dude is like awesome. So that's why everyone keeps on telling me when I play Pokemon Go, I gotta keep on catching a lot of those goatfish because he's gonna evolve into something amazing. That's the dude he evolves into?
A giant sea monster, yeah.
That scene was incredible. In terms of the villain and the plot, I was so confused. I'm like, so wait a minute. The humans become the Pokemon, or they form into like one thing? Like,
dude, their
like,
brains go into the Pokemon. It's like,
so what happens to their body?
But that's not what happens. That's not like that happens to him. But then, for whatever harebrained reason, by the end, he's dropping gas, and they're all just fusing together.
No, so he's making them fuse together. All right, so this is what happened. So he had to achieve his connection with Mewtwo via a head link, like a link between their brains. However, once he becomes Mewtwo, he can then make everybody else, their minds go into Pokemons after the Pokemons get excited by the purple gas. It's kind of like, it reminded me a lot of the end of Tim Burton's Batman, where the Joker is trying to, you know, poison everybody at a parade kind of thing.
Yeah, but the thing is, where do the bodies disappear to? Like, I can understand, like...
I don't know, dude. They
went into the Pokemon. That's the part that I have, like, the biggest issue with. If it was just their minds, I think I could let it go despite how stupid it is.
I think that's what it's supposed to be. I think they got rid of the bodies because of the image.
You literally see,
bodies.
The body of Lucy come out of her Psyduck in the end.
Yeah, I know, and I just did not understand that. Like, put aside the physics, I understand
it literally comes out.
I understand that this is a movie, and we got to suspend our disbelief. But within the movie, within the universe, there are still rules, and the fact that these Pokemon are physical beings, like living next to the humans, it just doesn't make any sense that the humans would go into the body of the Pokemon.
Well, here's
and
the thing.
Not only that, but at the very end, I'm so confused. So Ryan Reynolds shows up. But Pikachu is still alive. So, but Ryan Reynolds, like, comes back from the dead? Because
no, his body was in Pikachu. Mew had made his body go into Pikachu. So he was basically conversing with his dad the entire time, only his dad had lost his memory, so he didn't realize it was his son.
Also, Tim had lost his memory and didn't remember what his dad sounded like.
Yeah, exactly, right? So here's the problem with all of this. Like, you talk about suspension of disbelief. In a movie, you can buy almost anything, right? But the movie has to properly establish it. And that means that work has to be done early on. They didn't do any of that. So all of a sudden, at the end, you're like, what the hell is happening? How are these bodies able to go inside these Pokemon? Or how are these people being able to transfer their consciousness? Because a purple gas makes Pokemon excited. And for some reason, that makes them susceptible to possession. Or whatever is happening, and Mewtwo has this power that's never been explained before. Like, how was he able to do that? They didn't establish any of it. And in order for suspension of disbelief to happen, you've got to set up your world. You've got to establish those rules so that later on people will understand what's going on. This movie does none of that.
What makes it worse, what makes it way worse, is that we know that this guy has been doing all sorts of experiments on Pokemon, right? At no point are any of these experiments logical or helpful, except for maybe he has a cool army of Greninjas. That seems like it could be helpful, as is shown in the movie. But at what point is it a good idea to make multiple Godzillas out of a Torterra? Like, at what point was that logical?
Wait a minute. Are you talking about the ground coming to life? Because that left me really confused. I was that like, was I don't understand why the ground is moving and why it's turning into a forest. Like, I was so confused. And I listened to your podcast, and Ryan mentioned this whole thing about how Pikachu dies because he hits the ground, and he's like an electric Pikachu, Pokemon, and they all have different types, and there's like psychic and water and grass. And I'm like, I don't understand.
Is that why he died?
I don't know. Thematically, I don't get it.
Types are weak to ground, so it was kind of a subtle nod that he gets hit.
But
by
isn't everything weakened to ground? Like, if you drop a psychic Pokemon like a million feet from the sky, is he not going to die when he hits the ground?
No, he. Well, if it's Mewtwo, no, he'd fly. Duh, we saw that, Rick.
Okay, so I don't understand why the ground moved. I don't like. Was that a Pokemon? Like, I'm so confused.
Yes, in the lab, there was the Torterra garden, and it said that the experiment was growth, right? And then they were like, "Well, they don't look that much bigger to me." because that wasn't the actual Torteras that had been grown. The Torteras that had been grown were an entire mountain range, apparently, in what is one of the stupidest moments in any movie I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, because what is the purpose? That's they at least you could buy, they never established like the villain as being this guy who desperately wants to escape his illnesses, to escape his wheelchair type situation. He's clearly handicapped of, you know, in some way, and he's never really properly set up as this guy who would do sort of anything to get out of that, and that's why all this genetic experimentation is happening. Although, who knows why the growth thing? Like, who cares? Was he preparing to sell it to the military? Like, what was going on?
Or was he like, was his end game like, I'm going to be a real big Pokemon in the end?
Well, he didn't. Like, why why did he want everybody else to be Pokemon? They never explain that. They never say for one moment why he insisted that everybody be Pokemon.
Because, okay, so for that, they kind of alluded it to it in that in his warped mind, he thought that Pokemon were the true evolutions of humans. But we only got that from, like, one line of dialogue where he's like, marvelous creatures, aren't they? That's not enough development of that thought.
This is the problem with Hollywood movies. They don't know how to properly write villains. Like, even Thanos in Avengers Endgame, I think, at least in the first movie, he's like a pretty good villain. But then I start thinking, I'm like, why? Like when he snaps his fingers, he can pretty much wish for whatever he wants. So if he thinks the world is overpopulated, why doesn't he just wish for double the resources or double the space to inhabit all of these people so it's not going to be as overpopulated? And, like, I mean, if the main problem is a lack of resources, and this is the thing. Like, it's like,
in defense of Avengers, the stones are difficult to use, and no one was capable of just solving their problems that easily. I think it's easier to eliminate things than it is to create things.
I think killing half of the population with a snap of a finger is a pretty easy way to fix your quote-unquote problem. Exactly. In this movie, I don't understand why he wants everyone else to evolve. Like Patrick said,
I don't know what the problem is.
What is the motivation? Like, I understand his motivation. Like, it makes sense. The guy's in a wheelchair. He wants to evolve. Physically, he wants to become better and stronger. And you know, he doesn't want to grow old and whatever. But, like, why does he need everyone else to evolve? Like, it makes no sense.
So I got it, like, at the end of Tim Burton's Batman, for example, which has a very similar thing. You understood what the Joker was doing. Like, you completely got why he was going to poison the entire town. That it was basically out of revenge, and he wanted everybody to kind of look like him, sort of thing. Like, it was very clear. It was all made very clear. Because they took their time in establishing him as a character. But I mean, just saying that, like, you admire the Pokemon and maybe humans can take the next step, and yet you're forcing it? Like, at what point was he also portrayed, like, as a super evil dude? Other than, for some reason, at the very end, he decides to poison everybody and force them into Pokemon evolution. Like, up until that point, though, he was never portrayed as this... the kind of person that would force things on others. You at least need to have a scene, a smaller scale scene, where he is imposing his will on somebody, but you never see that.
Also,
and, you know, the reason why you don't see it is because they think it's clever to have a twist where he's the bad guy, not his son. And you know what?
Yeah.
That's the problem with having a twist. If the twist takes away from actually telling a good story, it's not a good decision to sacrifice story for a twist.
That was the twist of the game. It was the son was the bad guy. And so they, like, did a twist on that.
I guess, but this is not a game, and, like, even with the game, I'm not sure how long the game lasts, but you can probably play that game for, what, 20 hours at least? This is a movie, and it's a very short movie. It's only, like, an hour and 40 minutes, so you have to do a really good job in telling a story. And that's the thing, like, they're trying too hard to, like, just do too much in one movie.
Just, if they would have just simplified things just a little bit, like, Mewtwo is a crazy strong psychic Pokemon. And he's got crazy mental powers. So why not just, like, mentally manipulate people? Why is this guy out to literally change their being when he could just try to control them instead? And it's like, cool, you're a bad guy in a movie. This is fine. But instead they go for, oh, this guy is acting on some impulse that I'll never understand. Especially since, like, maybe he should have, like, made permanent his fusion to Mewtwo before doing any of this. Like,
well, the thing that I find most disappointing is that I thought that at the end he would evolve into or become Mewtwo. Like, I don't know. They would become one creature, and it would be like all of these Pokemon battling him, just like everyone's battling Thanos in Avengers Endgame, right? And I thought that would have been cool. Like, you see a bunch of Pokemon battles.
Charizard shows back up. That Gyarados shows up, yeah.
Yeah, like, I thought that would have been awesome, and I think they missed a great opportunity there. That said, that's my, like, only, I mean, it's, I say my only, it's like a lot to complain about, but it's like, it's essentially like the motivations behind the villain, the third act, where I think the movie falls apart. But again, because of the chemistry of the cast and the acting and the performances, I think that they kind of save a train wreck. Like, it's not as bad, at least when you're watching, like, when you think about it, like, when you leave the theater and you start thinking about it, that's when you're like, wait a minute, none of it makes sense. But when you're in the moment, it's no, kind of like you just...
pretty immediately, yeah, I was like, what?
I was kind of bored for the last third, I gotta admit, because I could tell everything was falling apart, and they weren't, like I say, the payoffs had no setup, so they're not satisfying in the slightest. So you're just sort of watching eye candy then at that point.
I have one more question before we wrap up the show. My last question is, the character played by... what is her name again? It starts with an S. Her. Is that's not an actual Pokemon from like any of the games, right?
Ditto? Yeah, it is.
Oh, it is. Oh, okay. Because I was told that there's a character that was created specifically for the movie.
At Ditto, I think I caught him in one of the games. Or no, in Pokemon Go. That's right. Because I remember they had like a day where they unleashed a bunch of Dittos or something, didn't they? Like a special
okay, because there's 60 Pokemon in this movie, so you're saying all 60 Pokemon are actually from the games. There's no new creations for this movie.
No.
Okay, and in the actual, because there's like 22 films made prior, and they're all animated, right? Mm-hmm. Question number one is, did any of those movies get a theatrical release stateside? And question number two isn't Mewtwo like a bad guy?
So here's the deal with Mewtwo. His origin is different depending off if you're taking the anime or if you're talking about the game. In either case, he's created by Team Rocket as a superior clone to Mew in an attempt to make the strongest Pokemon in the world so that the Team Rocket boss can dominate, right? So all that's consistent. In the games, he gets loose and goes and hangs out in a cave until you catch him at the very end of Red, Blue, and Yellow. In the anime, he breaks loose and basically holds a really big tournament where he clones a bunch of Pokemon and then challenges some of the best trainers in the world to show that he and his clones are superior. So in the show, in the first ever Pokemon movie, he was a villain until Ash Ketchum shows him that Pokemon and humans can love one another or something.
And they did, I know at least the first, maybe the first two Pokemon movies, anime movies, were in theaters, yeah.
The first three got theatrical releases from what I can remember. I remember seeing the third one in theaters when I was a child. And then years passed, and most of them were just kind of released on, like, I think the Japanese ones were frequently getting releases, but not in the States. It wasn't until recently that they did Pokemon I Choose You and some of the other more recent ones have gotten theatrical releases, but have been kind of like recreations. So, and they're very limited releases. It's not the scale that the first three were. Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think we all kind of agree. The last act or the last half roughly or whatever, too much action, didn't set up their story. But I mean, again, like I said, I was bored during the final fight for the most part, because I didn't find it very visually stimulating either. Once they left sort of the dust filled rooms and the smoky darkness and stuff like that, the visuals, like you said, Rick, started to sort of become more standard fare, less interesting. But it was likable enough. The whole thing was likable enough. I don't want to say like that it ruined it for me, but there was a lot more potential here that got sort of squandered, I think, especially with the script. The script had a lot to do with that.
Yep. Undoubtedly. Where I
That's
will...
That's what happens when four people write it, by the way.
I mean, if someone would have just honestly sat down with the source material and tried and made any effort, if they would have handed it to me, this movie would have been better, and I'm very confident in that. But also, I don't want giant-ass Pokemon for the sake of it, for the sake of an action sequence. So, where I will disagree with you, Rick, is I don't know if we're going to get a sequel. They wrap things up pretty cleanly. I think that what we're going to get is there was mentioned 20 years ago in Kanto. I think maybe we're going to get our proper Pokemon Red, Blue, Yellow movies, and that we'll probably get the origin of Mewtwo, which thank God can totally retcon and, or just not even allude to the fact that in this movie, Mewtwo can fuse people in Pokemon. Because what a dumb power creep of a move for a really cool Pokemon.
I think it's possible, but at the same time, Ryan Reynolds is a huge box office draw, and the movie made a lot of money. It didn't take the number one spot. The number one spot went to Avengers Endgame once again, but it made $53 million on the first opening weekend. John Wick comes out this week, so I don't imagine it making another $53 million, but I think it's gonna make enough money at the box office. I do see them making a Pokemon cinematic universe and making prequels, hands down for sure, but I still see them making a sequel to this movie.
If they do, and I think it's possible, let's be honest, I would see a movie that's Ryan Reynolds and his Pikachu going and solving crime. If they do choose that route, then please, for the love of God, just make a detective movie with some Pokemon battles in it. Please, just no sci-fi nonsense. Thank you. And
make sure Mr. Mime returns.
Yes.
Even if he's got if he's got an imaginary burn and he wants revenge.
Yeah.
And he's in the games too?
I didn't ever play the game, but I don't know. I think they
No, he's in Pokemon games. Yeah, Mr. Mime. He's in the original games.
I don't know if he was in Detective Pikachu the game in the same capacity, because that's what the writing should have been the whole way through, because what an amazing workaround to keep a dark noir scene in a kid-friendly movie. So funny, but also perfectly what it should have been.
Right, he's threatening to burn somebody to death in a kid's
movie. In a kid movie, but in a...
By the way, you could tell Ryan, because I was listening to your podcast, and he's all worried about Mr. Mime, what happens to him? In his mind, does he think that he's still on fire? I'm pretty sure that, because the scene cuts away, I'm pretty sure they walk back into the building and let him go, pretended they were throwing water on him or hosing him down. Yeah, they did not just let the guy burn. Dude, I think it was just a cutaway.
In the next movie, there's going to be a villain, and he's going to have that Mr. Mime, and they're going to team up, and they're going to want revenge.
Anyhow, it's a great movie. Go see it. If you listen to this podcast, you should have seen it already.
Yep, if you are here in the show. Alas, not what it should have been, but still plenty of fun. Thank you both for reviewing this movie with me and participating in Pokemon for a Change. God, it gets so lonely on this show. Just kidding. Patrick, where can we find you online?
You can find me at goombastop.com. I wrote the Box Boy review, which went up last week. For anybody who's curious about that, I really like that game, like Tim said. And other than that, I'll be finishing, thankfully, my Twilight Zone reviews up. I think there's only one more episode. Thank God. But I actually enjoyed the last one to a certain extent, but it has the most ridiculous ending of all time. It posits a theory that is just out of this world, even for the Twilight Zone. Check those out if you're into that show. You can find me online at Sword Cinema, of course.
Go do that now and check out those reviews. Excellently written, as always. Rick, what about you?
So the Twitter handle is Goomba Stomp. It's essentially the Twitter handle for the website, but it's sort of personalized. But you can find me on Twitter there and on Facebook. You can find us on just about every single social media platform that exists. I'm doing a lot of writing on Goomba Stomp these days. I wrote about Detective Pikachu, Mortal Kombat. I'm writing about Assassin's Creed, John Wick, you name it. Doing a lot of writing, so check out GoombaStomp.com. And I also recommend listening to the Game Boys podcast, Tim's podcast. They also reviewed Detective Pikachu, but you guys said a lot of things that we didn't say in the show, and I think it was a good 45 minutes review.
It's so, pretty long, yeah.
Yeah, you can find it on Goomba Stomp as well.
Yeah, what happens when you take three hardcore Pokemon fans and they all walk out of that movie? That's what that episode is. Go check that out and keep it tuned to Game Boys, as we have a bunch of really fun episodes coming up. I've been toting our 150th episode is coming up, and that's going to be something special. and completely different. I'm not saying what that is. And then after that, we have a Pokemon special because there are 151 original Pokemon, and we thought that was fun. Beyond that, find my stuff on Goomba Stomp. You can find me on Twitter at the Freemason, M-A-I-S-O-N. But mostly, just spend some time on Goomba Stomp. It's a great site. We all love it, and we all put a lot of work into it. So go check out all those reviews that were just mentioned, and stay tuned for I've Got a Detective Pikachu piece. And it's just about ready as well. Leave us a rating and a review anywhere you do listen, whether on iTunes, Stitcher, whatever app you prefer. It really goes a long way. Open stores like lets us go to E3, PAX, other events, and lets us cover some of these movies and games really easily. So thank you, as always, for listening. We'll be back next week with all things Nintendo. We'll see you then.
Imagine me and you, I do. I think about you day and night. It's only right to think about the girl you love and hold her tight. So happy together. If I should call you up, invest a dime, and you say you belong to me, and ease my mind. Imagine how the world could be so very fine. So happy together.